First of Chronicles, chapter 3. Well, here you've got the background to David's family life. One of his earliest children, verse 1, was called Daniel. You don't read much about Daniel, son of David, but he was the firstborn from Abigail, the Carmelitess. Now, Daniel means God is judge, and that's an understandable name for David to choose at a time when he was being persecuted by Saul. He was on the run from Saul, and he has Abigail with him, takes her as his wife, and they have this child called Daniel. So I think that you can say that that was a reflection of how he was leaving judgment to God. God is going to judge this situation. You remember when he had the opportunity twice to kill Saul, he says, "No, I'm not going to do that because I will leave judgment to God." Now, this is so difficult for us all, isn't it? And of course, he very nearly killed Abigail when he was going to kill Nabal and his whole family because he wanted to take judgment into his own hands. And it was Abigail who persuaded him not to do that. And so it's appropriate that their firstborn was called Daniel, God is the judge. It's as if he had the humility to learn from his wife, from Abigail, and also in reflection of his very strong belief that I am not to lay my hands upon the Lord's anointed. And this is difficult for all of us, to believe that God is ultimately the judge. So many people struggle with injustice. Why is the world so unjust? Why does this happen to me that's not fair? Justice needs to be done and needs to be seen to be done. People take each other to court and get people punished, and they walk out of court and they're interviewed, and people say, "Well, I'm glad that justice was done." And yet you think, yeah, so you say, but you still got to live the rest of your life. And do you really think that getting the guy locked up or making him pay a fine to you, you really think that was justice? Did that really undo, ultimately, what the person did to you, in your opinion? Well, no, not in the end. People put on a brave face and say, "Ah, well, it's all over now and justice was done." Well, of course, they have to say that. But I don't believe that there is that ultimate sense of ultimate resolution. And it is only divine judgment that can bring that sense of ultimate resolution and justice being done. And that is not now. That is at the last day. And this, I think, is built into human experience to humble us. Because the only people who are going to be saved are the humble. The proud will not be saved. And it's the proud who say, "Nope, justice must be done now. I shall get out and march and stomp on the streets until I see, in my opinion, justice done." But how many of those people in later life really feel that justice was done? Of course, they will put a brave face on it and say, "Yes, we fought in the name of justice. We campaigned for justice, etc." It's only ultimately God's justice and God's repayment that is the ultimate justice, and the humble will therefore wait for him to sort that out. And David does learn this, I think. And yet, as with all human life, in some ways he learnt, other ways he maybe didn't. You look at these children that are listed here in verses 2 and 3, he has 6 sons in 7 years by 6 different women, including Gentiles. Absalom was the son of Maachah, the daughter of Talmai, king of Geshur. Well, this is not exactly one man, one woman, is it? He was weak, and he likewise keeps some horses for himself in 2 Samuel 8. You look at those weaknesses. The king of Israel was not supposed to have horses, and yet he keeps just a few. And having multiple women in his life, multiple children by multiple women, 6 sons in 7 years by 6 different women, these are just the sons recorded. I'm sure there were daughters as well, possibly therefore by other women. And he also had children, we read in verse 9, by the concubines. So he had wives plus concubines. Well, when it comes to Solomon, his son, those weaknesses of David are magnified multiple times. He has 700 wives, 300 concubines, and he has stalls for 40,000 horses, not just a few. And the king of Israel was not supposed to have horses. So one dimension of sin is the example that we set. And we may think that I am a little insignificant person, and if I mess up, well, I mess up. It's just between God and myself. Well, not so. We all have far more influence than we possibly imagine. And you are a light of the world. You are a living word made flesh. You are the body of Jesus. And he has no other hands or face or arms or legs in this world apart from you and me. This is the whole point of us being the body of Christ. And so you see particularly then how Solomon just repeated the sins of his father. He keeps on and on, doesn't he, about David, my father. My father David uses this phrase literally hundreds of times. If you look through the record, he hundreds of times is on about my father David. He's quite obsessed with his father. He's quite obsessed with living out parental expectation. But David, like all people, was not perfect, as you see here with his attitude to women, his attitude to horses, etc. And yet Solomon therefore thought, well, I'm justified in those things. Dad did it, so can I. And the call of the gospel is to radical individuation. That is to be a person before God and before Jesus, to be a new creation where all things in the past have faded away and all things have become new. And it's only the birth, the new birth through the Spirit that can achieve that. Now, I don't think Solomon went through that. And that's why, as I say, he is a stellar example of repeating and magnifying the sins of his father, rather than being a new person. Now, of course, it's good to raise children to believe, as we do. Of course, that is absolutely right and godly and biblical. And yet, in the end, each man must cut his own path through the jungle. Each person must come to that personal relationship with God. And you see in Solomon a man who utterly failed to do that.